I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to The Poisoner's Cabinet. I'm Sinead.
And I'm Nick.
And this is your weekly podcast exploring the lives of the great poisoners, macabre murders and captivating crimes from across the centuries, and creating curious cocktails inspired by the tales that we tell. And it's episode 166.
Yes, it is.
166.
Hurrah.
Hurrah. And it's a special one.
Is it?
Ish.
Oh. Sad.
Oh, it's sad because it's the last one we're ever going to record. In Nick's current abode.
In my house.
In your house. If you are a Patreon subscriber, you know Nick's address now because I let it slip. And then we thought, fuck it, why not? So you will be stalked this week, I think. But yeah, it's the end of an era, isn't
it? It is indeed. Aww. Sad times.
Yeah. I know to everyone listening, they're going, what the fuck are you talking about? We don't care. Get to the murder. But it's significant and we should raise a glass to the cottage that's not made of toads.
That's
an obscure reference there. Me with my pre-cocktail. You with your Weetabix wine.
My lovely wine.
Your Weetabix wine.
It's a delightful wine.
It's not. Why do you like that wine?
A lovely wine.
It's a Chardonnay he has, and I like a Chardonnay. Because this one's called Bread and Butter, and it tastes of bread. It doesn't even taste of bread. It tastes of Weetabix. it fucking does.
No.
Oh, no. Oh.
No.
All right. Well, it's more for you.
Wrong. Well, exactly. Yeah. So, works for me.
It was the one time you came in and said, no, taste it first.
Yeah, so I knew you wouldn't like it. So, I was like, don't pour yourself a glass because it will go to waste.
Yeah.
Taste that. And you went, ugh.
Yeah. Then you threw a cork at me.
And then I threw a cork at you.
Then you threw a cork at me. You made sure the cameras were off, but you threw a cork at me.
I've learned after 165 episodes, make sure the cameras are off.
Well, I'm keeping the cork as evidence. That's it. This is our relationship, people. You think it's all fake for the podcast? Fucking not. Love you. Well, how are you apart from being in a near empty home? That sounds very depressing.
It's nowhere near empty.
Which is what
I'm finding stressful.
But I come in and it's bare. It's very...
Really not? There's a lot of shit in this house.
You've added
still.
A plant. That plant was not there last week.
It was in the other room.
Right, was
so
it?
So I
though?
Moved it.
Oh, okay, fine.
Mainly to remind me to say, Sinead, take this plant.
Oh, is it? Oh, can I have it?
You can't have it. You can look after it temporarily.
I'm going to kill it.
As you are doing with all my other plants.
Yeah, I am doing that. And they are all fine, by the way. Nothing bad has happened to any of them.
So, yes.
The palm tree. What's the one? The
Draconacea.
Yeah, the Draconacea is doing well.
Is it? Have you killed my plants?
No, I just had to give it a lot of plant food. It was not used to direct sunlight.
Nothing is in this house.
Because you live in just like a Victorian cottage of darkness.
It's just a house of gloom. So.
And I put it near sunlight and it started to shrivel. It was like Dracula going, no! It's fine now. It's fine. I fed it a lot and went, oh, please don't die. Nick will kill me. But apart from that,
it's just world of boxes.
World of boxes. Soon it will be over.
Soon, a week to go.
This time next week, will be in some sort of state of limbo. We'll probably be recording this from a remover's truck.
I have no idea what's going to happen this time next week.
Or my house. Or just at my house, because I have a house. Is
that? No, you live in a box in the street. And you live under a bridge.
It's a lovely bridge.
It's a lovely bridge. Sinead's actually a troll.
Yeah, how else do I keep visitors away? It's my ideal job to be a troll under a bridge. I'm near water, in the countryside, no one fucking bothers
Endless
me.
Goats. Sinead's sorted.
Why that tickled me so much. Do you like goats?
Well, there we go.
Well, any poisonings this week? No.
Just no.
Just
possibly.
None. No.
Been far too busy to maintain watch.
No, I have been poisoned, but in a good way.
You poisoned my plants?
That's the thing that I'm really trying to get back at you for. Leaf by leaf. No, in a good way, because I don't think we've mentioned it, is cannot get out of my head the new Broadway recording of Sweeney Todd.
Oh, so good.
I can't stop listening to it.
I mean, I've actually looked at flights.
Oh, so have I.
So sort of, I'm going to go to New York for the weekend to see this.
Yeah, everyone who listens to it, whatever influence you have, we're a fairly big podcast. We have a good gathering. We can do shit for tickets. I mean, this is the thing that we will sell our souls for.
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely.
If we can have tickets, we'll get ourselves there.
Smoking, it's great. Buy cigarettes. Tickets, please.
I don't think tobacco companies are sponsoring Sweeney Todd.
I don't know. Just a cash lump sum.
Just that. Anyone, if you're all in New York, start some sort of campaign. I don't know why you would do this, but go with me here.
That's going to work.
Yeah, but just that is my brain now, okay. is singing all those songs.
That's good.
So there we go. Hope you're with us on that one. Mm. Well, speaking of being poisoned by fantastic musicals and drinking Weetabix wine, I think it is time for us to thank our delicious Patreon subscribers.
Yes, indeed. Who I'm sure don't put cats into pies. I'm quite sure they don't.
Did he put cats into pies? He didn't put cats in.
That's what
Mrs. Lovett did at the beginning.
Put pussies into pies.
Pussies in the pies, yeah.
See?
Worst pies in London. I was reading the whole synopsis today when on a break at work. Had to break from the work that I do for myself and just read the synopsis of Sweeney Todd.
Anyway, thank you very much.
Way.
Angelique Stein.
To Kate Watson.
To Cake or Death. Cake or Death.
Cake or Death. And sorry, anyone who has to follow that, but to the beautiful Vicky Pratter.
Thank you very much. You're all bloody marvellous.
Especially you, Nick. Cake or Death.
Do you have a flag?
No flag, no country.
No flag, no country. You can't have one.
Cake, please. Well, cake. We're out of cake.
Cake, please. Wasn't expecting such a rush. Anyway, moving on before we just do this all for us.
We could. Thank you, delicious, sexy Patreon subscribers. We had fun on Patreon this week. We carried on Executioner's Tale of William Colcroft as well, who was very prolific, but maybe shit.
Maybe
his job.
Just dreadful.
Maybe just dreadful. But he killed a lot of people we know.
Lucky him.
Through the podcast, not people we know. Patreon's a wonderful place. If you want to know what the hell we're talking about, please come and join us on Patreon for about $5 a month. There is a higher tier, $15 a month, but you get extra content every single week, as well as videos of us doing cocktails, doing the show, lots of extra outtakes and all sorts of fun things. You get to chat with us about books. It's a beautiful, beautiful place. So consider joining us if you can. Well, Nick, are you ready? To drink cocktails and talk about poison. Or we could drink poison and talk about cocktails.
Yes.
Should we go with the first
one? Yeah, okay, let's do that.
Yeah, let's go with the first one. Hooray, hooray, hooray. It is Nick's story this week, but we can't possibly have a story without a cocktail in hand. As you know, dear listeners, every week we choose a secret ingredient that is inspired by the tale that we tell, and it will flavour our cocktail of the week. Nick's story, so his pick. And this week's secret ingredient is...
an automobile.
A car.
A car.
Yes, a car. Well, it's surprising we haven't had a car before.
I'm impressed.
Yes, and yeah. You said old-timey
An old demi car.
So I picked a nice picture.
You did? A very appropriate picture.
It was a very fancy car. Yeah. It was a very old Ford, wasn't it? And that was the style, wasn't it?
That was a good car. Oh, absolutely.
They didn't go very fast or well, but they looked good. It's much like us.
Yeah, pretty much.
Excellent. So car, I mean, there must be a plethora of cocktails that are car inspired. So makes of car, like you must have Ferraris and Lamborghinis and
very possibly
Ford Focuses.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
The Lada.
The classic Focus cocktail.
Yes, the Micra and wheels and steering and crankshafts. All
the components.
Yeah, the clutch.
Clutch.
And the other, the petrol.
The pedals. So many, all the itty outy buttons.
You think you have a spacecraft now, Nick?
Windscreen wipers.
Yeah, windscreen wipe. Maybe a windscreen wipe is a great cocktail. You never know.
Is it?
The exhaust really? Pipe? We could do this for a while.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, let's not.
With all of this inspiration, what have you come up with?
We are going to have.
Okay.
We're having a Ford.
Oh, a Ford.
Oh, having a Ford.
Oh, a Ford.
A Ford cocktail.
Okay. So Ford definitely is in car, but not Ford is in a river.
No, definitely as in car.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
That's cleared that up.
Yeah, I'm glad.
It does sort of feel like, oh, a Ford.
A Ford.
Much like the car itself. You go, oh, it's just a Ford. Sensible, reliable.
Well, exactly.
Boring.
Boring. Yeah. But around, but there. Okay. And quite appropriate.
Okay, right. Well, you've set us up for I don't know what. I think it is high time for us to drive into the poisonous cabinet kitchen and shake up a storm. So we'll see you in a minute.
We'll see you in a bit.
And we're back.
Hello.
So, Nick, we have the Ford.
The very, very full Ford.
It is. You did make them very full.
Yes, it's very, very large drink.
It has been an absolute joy to see Nick, old lady-like, just walking them slowly, like, don't spill it, don't spill it, don't spill it, don't spill it, don't spill it. And then you did spill it. And I was so glad because it wasn't me who'd done it, because you would have yelled at me. But yeah, it's very pale. It's almost wine. Is it just wine?
It's another glass of wine.
Is it just more
it's
of
a
your
lovely,
biscuit wine?
Lovely wine.
Okay, well, it's very full, which promises a lot.
It promises quantity.
It's quantity over quality. It's very full, to be fair. Yeah, yeah. Mass produced and sort of like, yeah, it's reliable. Taint fancy. Sorry, I know a lot about Ford, seemingly.
Apparently so.
I really don't. That's very basic knowledge. But anyway, I think we should dive in.
Let's give it a go.
Can we bear to lift it? For it is so full.
Slowly.
Okay, Merry Christmas.
Ooh.
Okay. You like that?
Yeah, I'm assuming you don't.
I don't know. There's something wrong.
Oh, yeah. There's something wrong.
Oh, there's something. Sorry. Oh, I can't describe it.
Oh, no, I don't object to that at all.
Oh, it's mellowed. Sorry, the first sip.
I'm quite offended by that.
It's actually closer to a. Now it tastes a bit like a martini, but when you first did it, it was like really strong on vermouth. Is vermouth in there?
There's vermouth in there.
Okay, right. There was a lot of it. I felt.
Okay.
At that moment. It's mellowed on the second sip to sort of a martini vibe. And a third sip now, because in for a penny, in for a pound.
Well, quite.
Yeah, that's sort of like a wet martini.
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
And there's other stuff in there as well.
And other stuff. And are there twigs in it?
No.
Oh, thank God. I didn't think there were twigs in it, but yeah, there's a lot of vermouth in that.
There is, yes, compared to the dry martini that we would normally have, there is a high quantity of vermouth in there. But there's also two other things. Three other things. Martini plus two.
Right.
So,
okay.
Gin, vermouth, and two other things.
Right, so there's gin. Right.
Yes.
Okay, I knew that. Right. Yes, I mean, are these two other things cheats, like bitters?
One of them is. Okay, one of them isn't.
One's a bitter.
Yes.
A specific kind of bitter?
Gimme. Yep, go on then.
Orange?
Yes.
Acing this test.
One more thing.
Absinthe?
Nope.
Beer, Cocci Americano, no. Lillet.
Nope.
Any other variant of a...
No.
No. Vodka?
No.
Rum?
No, we have had it before. I'd be surprised if you get it. It's quite a small quantity, and it's not something we often have in a cocktail. It's not something that's commonly in appears.
Tears?
Yes.
Yep. Okay. I don't know. I feel like my face is now closing up. I'm just going numb because that's quite strong suddenly. I don't know. Why are you taking your phone out?
No, I'm not. I've got to remind myself if there's, make sure there is only to the two things. I'm sure there is. And I'll just remind myself, yes. No, I'm quite right.
This other thing that I lied about.
No, there's no other things.
Okay, what is it?
Benedictine.
Oh, is it Benedictine? That's twiggy. That's kind of twiggy. It's twiggy.
Yeah, but you say twigs and you mean chartreuse.
I mean the family of chartreuse.
The family of twigs.
That's what I mean. I don't mind Benedictine, but it's right on the cusp. That's so. Why I gagged. I was like,
So Benedictine.
Benedictine, okay.
Yeah. So it's a wet martini with some orange bitters and some Benedictine. It's a forward cocktail. And I don't object to that.
You like it?
I like it.
I don't know if I do. That's really thrown me.
No, it's growing on me. That one really is.
Like a martini. You do.
much drier martini.
I do.
Yeah,
I
it's
really
your thing.
Do like a dry martini. I actually don't mind a vodka martini.
Yeah.
Either.
And this is the very opposite of.
Yeah,
that.
It's wet. Yeah. Yeah, it's like that band.
But do you feel it in your fingers?
I feel it in my toes.
Excellent.
And in my teeth. It's not undrinkable.
I mean, that's glorious praise, that, isn't it?
I mean, you didn't invent this, did you?
No, I didn't invent it.
No, exactly. So I'm not blaming you, Nick. I'm just disappointed, that's all.
Just disappointed me that I picked such a disgusting, awful, awful drink.
I had such high hopes for you, but
I've disappointed
right.
you, haven't I?
No,
I've disappointed
it's,
you.
I don't know. Yeah, it's not my kind of martini. Yeah. I think it's too, for me, it's got too much vermouth in it. The Benedictine, I can taste it. It's just adding to the overall wetness, which sounds very strange to describe a cocktail if you're not a martini person. Trust us, we've not lost our minds.
Sinead has lost her mind.
We've not just been drinking gravel for years.
The cocktail is too wet for her.
The drinks are too
the
wet.
The drinks are too wet.
The sand is too dry. The light is too dark. So, yeah, that's confusing. But you really like it.
I like it. Yeah. No,
what
I'm
do you
very
like
happy
about
with that.
It?
I don't know. I look, because I'm generally, you prefer a dry martini. I prefer something slightly less dry. And you know I like a twig. I'm a big fan
like
of anything twiggy. So that works for me.
Well, you know what? It's there. It's very full. And it's not my episode.
And it might be over here in a minute.
I'm worried for you because you just said this is a long episode.
Yeah.
This and that much wine may have been a mistake. I'm going to love this no matter what. So with the Fords firmly in Nick's hand, me, I'm sort of trailing behind him, holding it, going, oh, okay, I guess we're going to this party. Is it time for a story?
It certainly is.
Yay!
Hurrah. And we're going to start off. I've got a question for you.
Okay.
Question for you.
Good.
So, iconic power couples in history.
Ooh.
Who are you thinking?
Oh, God. The power couples.
They get stuff done and they're in there. They're in the media. They're known about. They're famous.
So Jackie O and Aristotle. We said it at the same time.
Jackie O and Aristotle.
Onassis.
Oh, this is Jackie O and Aristotle.
Aristotle. You didn't let me finish. You cut me off. Aristotle. Yeah, Aristotle and Onassis. Her husband. That's how she became Jackie O.
Yes, but yes. I was thinking more Jackie O and JFK.
Okay, her surname wasn't Jackie O, which was
RFK Kennedy.
She's Jackie O with Aristotle and Onassis.
Yes, I know. Anyway, I need another one.
Oh, God, awful. But Donald Trump and Ivana Trump, the thing that came into my head was Prince Edward and Wallis Simpson.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sonny and Cher.
Sonny and
you
Cher.
You not go with that? Jay-Z and Beyonce?
Jay-Z and Beyonce. You've just looked up pop culture references.
I did.
You did some Googling. There, didn't you?
Cleopatra and Mark Antony.
Oh, yeah.
Go with that one?
Let's go with that
Jack
one.
Jack and Rose.
No, God, power couple? No, she let that fucker die. There was room on the bit of
Wills
good.
And Kate.
No, nah. Not a power couple. No, born into privilege, sorry.
Yeah. Anyway, so.
Bonnie and Clyde.
Bonnie and... So if we look back to the 1930s.
No, fuck off. No, sure.
You ruined my moment. You've stolen my thunder.
Is it Bonnie and Clyde?
We are looking at Bonnie and Clyde.
Yay! Oh, that's brilliant.
So, there we go.
Oh, yay. I'm so happy. I'm so happy that I also guessed. We guessed a lot of couples in that.
Guessed a lot of couples, got a couple. At the time, predominantly known by their surnames of Barrow and Parker. But now, as you say, famously known. Bonnie and Clyde.
Beautiful. If we carried on the couples thing, I was one step away from saying Kermit the Frog and Miss Piggy.
I mean, I would have accepted it. I would have taken that answer.
Can you name a bigger power couple? I'm sorry.
So we've got Bonnie Parker and Clyde Barrow, famous for their love, their dedication to each other through prison breaks and robberies and murders and all sorts of shenanigans. And they have been romanticized as this young couple in love, doing what they had to do to survive during the harshness of the Great Depression, 30s America. But what is the real story? What is the real history?
I'd love to know.
Behind the world, good. I'm glad you do, because we're going to find out.
Oh, good.
Because you said, no, I don't want to know that, then we're screwed.
No, bored. Let's talk about Kermit.
Let's talk about Kermit and Miss Piggy. Much more exciting.
Then next week. And the bloody murders they left in their wake.
Absolutely. The trail of destruction that they left.
So we're going to on a Netflix documentary.
Just a talking head.
Do I sit here? Okay.
In shadow, in a complete blackout. But that, just the nose. Like, I think I can guess who that is.
Oh, God. I know it's a long episode, but that's amazing. Right, okay.
Anyway.
No more jokes from now on.
No more jokes.
It's all serious now.
Serious. We're going to start ladies first. Bonnie Elizabeth Parker. Okay, was born on the 1st of October, 1910, to Emma and Charles Parker in Rowena, Texas. Now, she's the middle of three children, and when Bonnie is 4 years old, her father passes away after an accident at work. Now, this leads her mother, Emma, moving the entire family to Cement City in West Dallas.
Well, that doesn't sound promising.
It doesn't sound jolly at all.
Is that his actual name?
His name is Cement City. It's actually a bit of a shanty town that has popped up to support the cement, a lot of cement works, the factories in the area. And this sort of grand place, a cement city, it's like a collection of hovels, really.
But work.
Absolutely.
Industrious.
The industrious accommodation is cheap, and it is near to her own parents, who live around by Dallas. The perfect place for them to go. Now, there is a school there, and Bonnie is described as bright, and she has interests in poetry and literature. And poetry is one thing that she'll come back to throughout her life, because she is quite well known for crafting her poems. She used to perform in school pageants and talent shows, singing popular Broadway songs and country tunes. And she told all her friends, all her school friends, that she was going to become famous. She was going to have her name up in lights. She had no doubt about it.
Nice.
And it was in her second year of high school that the 15-year-old Bonnie met her soon-to-be husband, the 17-year-old Roy Thornton.
Oh, okay.
She married.
Roy
Thornton.
That's none of the names that we know.
I know, indeed. Yes, she was married. So the two begin this whirlwind romance, and they are married within a year. They drop out of school. They marry on the 25th of September, 1926, which is 6 days before Bonnie's 16th birthday.
Ew.
So she's 15, he's 17. Almost 16, she's 15, he's 17. They marry, and in honour of their wedding, Bonnie gets both their names tattooed on her leg.
She does,
yeah,
she?
Yeah, absolutely. Sort of like Roy and Bonnie forever.
That's great energy. Absolutely.
She got on her right thigh.
On her right thigh? Oh, yeah. Nice.
Absolutely.
Her favourite thigh.
Her favourite thigh. Does one have a favourite thigh?
Obviously you do, yeah.
Well, I must compare.
You need to start making decisions in your
life.
Yeah,
absolutely. Apparently so. I'm missing out. Now, the marriage, not particularly successful.
Surely not.
Yeah,
young
what
love?
A surprise. Yeah. So it instantly becomes strained. Roy is constantly away, supposedly trying to find work somewhere. But really, he has started already numerous affairs with other young women around the area. Well, as you say, young love, it is all encompassing at the time. A few months is like, oh, that was stupid. It lasts about 3 years. Mm-hmm. They managed to keep together for about 3 years before they do finally separate in January of 1929. Now, they are never actually divorced. They remain legally married, but they never saw each other again. After their separation in January, they never clapped eyes on each other. And Bonnie moves back to Dallas, lives with her mother again, and she works as a waitress while she's trying to find something new. Now, soon after this return to Dallas, she meets Clyde Barrow. So now moving on to Clyde. So Clyde Chestnut Barrow. Middle name Chestnut.
Was it though?
Apparently so.
Chestnut. Who does that? I'm going to name you for a nut.
Clyde Barrow's parents.
Yes, clearly. They were looking around the room.
Yeah. I mean, he's born 24th of March 1909 to Henry and Kumi Barrow in Tellico in Texas. Now, he is the fifth of seven kids.
Ooh.
So, big old family. And they are living on the family farm in Tellico until a drought in the early 20s causes, the farm fails. There's no money coming in through the farm. Henry Barrow, the father, is forced to move his family to the growing city of Dallas to find work, most likely in one of the big old factories that's popping up all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the first few months, the entire family live underneath a wagon. They take shelter under a wagon.
Why? What?
Before they are able to afford a tent to live in.
Whose wagon was it?
Well, I don't know. Presumably their own wagon. And I'm assuming some sort of open-topped wagon. Or some sort of cart.
Right, a cart.
Or some sort of cart carrying all their possessions and everything. They are forced to take shelter underneath the wagon until they can afford to buy a tent.
That's awful.
I know. I mean, that is the height of poverty in the Great Depression.
That's pretty bleak. And also, sell the wagon, get a tent.
Get a tent.
Get a tent. Tents aren't expensive.
Well, apparently they were at the time. for nine of them. It's a hard life, really. Oof. Now, growing up, Clyde does attend school and he has ambitions of being a musician. And he learns to play the guitar and the saxophone. So nice. Quite a talented musician. But he hits 16. And he is forced, now you've got to leave school, you've got to help support the family. You need to get out of the factory, earn some money. Pretty much as soon as he leaves school, Clyde is introduced into a life of crime by his older brother, Buck.
Buck Barrow.
His actual name is Marvin.
Marvin.
Marvin Barrow. He's becomes known as Buck.
Well, I don't think we can trust the parents with the naming, because it's like Marvin and Chestnut over here. Okay, I'm calling myself Buck.
Yeah, exactly.
You just take your chances with whatever you got.
I don't know whether Buck was a middle name or you just thought, fucking Marvin, Buck. I'm going Buck.
Buck Barrow sounds like a comic book hero.
Yeah, so he's Buck Barrow, but he's
a stripper.
He's already found himself in a bit of a life of crime, and he's now introducing his younger brother, Clyde, to a similar environment, as it generally does. It starts off with petty theft, stealing the odd bits and pieces. That then leads to stealing cars. Everyone loves stealing cars. And then that leads quickly into armed robbery.
Quickly as it does. I'm going to steal this purse. Now I'm going to steal this car. Now I'm going to fucking shoot up everything.
Pretty much. It's a slippery slope. It's a slippery slope that Clyde has gone straight down.
You know what we need? Guns.
Guns. Everyone needs guns. Everyone has guns. In Texas, everyone has guns. So Clyde's first run-in with the law is at age 17 when he's arrested for failing to return a rental car on time.
Which arrested? Seems,
yeah, I know he's arrested. But mainly he's arrested because he flees. Because he runs.
So because
he's got this car that now he shouldn't have.
He should have driven.
He should. Well, he
got out of the car and then ran away. They were like, "We can catch you."
No, he did drive the car away from the police. The police gave chase. The police caught him.
So I didn't pay for the fuel allowance. No, oh shit.
And he is arrested.
Oh,
but it was his first thing. So I was like, "Don't do it again.
Don't do it again.
Don't do it again. Off you go." Mm-hmm. Not long after, both Clyde and Buck are arrested for being in possession of stolen turkeys. The bastards.
Absolute worst crime.
I'm not sure if this was around Christmas or Thanksgiving, potentially, when there was a rush on turkeys. So obviously peak turkey time.
That's why, were the turkeys alive?
Well, I do not know.
I just have a picture in my head of them being caught in some sort of hiding out in a shed or somewhere, and they open the door and they turn around
turkeys.
And then the turkeys are in each arm going just looking at them. You've stolen these turkeys away from their loved ones.
Presumably they were trying to sell the turkeys.
Yes. Well, I don't know what else they were planning to do.
Go free turkeys.
They were actually part
of the Turkey Alliance. They were
run free, waddle free. Turkeys are weird. Also, I'm going to say it. They're just, have you ever seen a turkey? Like a real live turkey?
I have.
They're odd.
Okay.
They're very possessive, actually.
That I've not become so close
to.
No,
it's true. I went to an animal sanctuary. This is not a long story. I went to an animal sanctuary and the turkeys get very jealous because they sort of form bonds with their keepers and stuff. And if they were petting other animals and the turkeys would just rush people and rush the other animals. No, I'm the best thing. And you're hideous.
And also, your lunch.
That's not really the vibe of an animal sanctuary.
Oh, animal sanctuary? Probably not, no.
I wasn't going to a farm. You'd go to an animal sanctuary, going, you look better with bacon on your back.
Terrible. Aside to the aside. I went with my sister a few years ago now to the local farm. There's a farm near where they live and where they got married, and it's all very lovely. And they do lambing every year. You can go and
pet the lambs,
watch lambs and things like that. Beautiful. But it's beautiful. It's lovely, and lambs and they're leaping around all over the place. But it is a farm.
Yeah.
You're going, that is lunch.
That is lunch.
That is absolutely going to be on the menu next week.
Yeah.
So we're going, oh, there's a little lamb. He's so cute. Oh, I called you Daisy. Oh.
Don't name it, Nick.
And then, oh, I'm going to eat you.
You would be the kind of fucker who would name it. And you're like, I'm going to call you Daisy when you're on my plate. Don't just have some sort of fantasy that lamb lived.
Lived a lovely and long, long, long. No, he didn't.
Whereas the brothers were with the turkeys going, run, turkeys.
They were having a grand old time with the turkey.
Jesus, you made it sound weird now.
Right. So,
gobble.
So throughout 1927, 1929, Clyde, he does actually hold down several legitimate jobs. Sort of labouring and working in factories and stuff like that. But he finds they are incredibly dull. So very boring.
Hey, work is dull.
Work is dull. Cracking safes, terrible. Robbing stores, stealing cars. So much more fun.
Adrenaline.
So much more lucrative. Much easier. So after 1929, he seems to have decided that jobs are for suckers. Fuck that. The real money is in crime.
Famously it is.
Yeah, absolutely. So now we come to a fateful day when Bonnie met Clyde. 5th of January in 19th. Now, Bonnie is caring for a mutual friend, Clarence, who has broken their arm. Clyde decides to pay a visit. Bonnie is in the kitchen mixing up some hot chocolate.
Oh, okay.
Apparently at the time.
We could have had hot chocolate.
So she's in the kitchen,
yeah,
mixing up at her saucepan, mixing up some hot chocolate. In walks Clyde. It is love at first sight. Their eyes meet across the simmering milk, and it is
that's excellent.
Just made that up.
Did you just make that? I thought you'd written that down.
No, I made it up. This is the stuff that dark
romance novels are made of, Nick. Tell us every little detail.
Yeah, they are smitten with each other.
He's a bad boy.
Oh, indeed. Now, the following weeks, the pair spend nearly all their time together.
Ooh.
Nearly every single moment is spent until this budding romance is interrupted by Clyde getting arrested and sent to jail for multiple charges of auto theft.
Right.
Which is going to put a dampener on any relationship.
A bad boy. I can set him straight.
And Bonnie seems convinced exactly of that. This is where she actually commits her first known crime,
mm-hmm.
is Bonnie. And she smuggles in a gun to the prison where Clyde is being held.
Fair play.
Well, I don't know, in a big cake, in a turkey, in a hat, I don't know.
In a turkey. It was definitely in a turkey. I brought you your favourite turkey to see you. The turkey is not doing well. The
turkey is not happy about it. She smuggles in a gun and manages to pass it across to her lover. On the 11th of March, Clyde and some number of his cellmates escape.
Great.
From the prison.
That's great. That's a shit prison.
Yeah, wow. He's got a gun. He's threatening people. He's going to kill them if they don't get them out.
They're all running across the field going, well, we couldn't stop him. He had a gun. We all have guns.
They're off.
Wee.
Very exciting.
Running across the field.
It doesn't last very long.
Shocking.
No, he's recaptured within a week.
I thought it'd be about 20 minutes.
No, he lasts a week.
Okay.
And then they track him down.
Fair enough.
And he is sentenced to 14 years of hard labour.
Fair.
Now, this is an Eastern Farm state prison. Eastern Farm is notorious for being a brutal and deeply unpleasant place.
Oh, cool.
Prisoners are routinely mistreated. They are subjected to backbreaking labour. Mm. The prison, say it's called Eastern Farms, they have cotton fields as part of the prison. And yeah, all the inmates are expected to work hours in the fields.
Hours!
No recompense whatsoever. This is a horrible, horrible place. Clyde himself is actually, he is repeatedly sexually assaulted by another inmate in the prison.
Oh, mate.
And one day, obviously, something snaps. He's had enough and he retaliates by attacking his tormentor with a metal pipe and actually crushes his skull, this chap. And instantly kills him. Then that is Clyde's first murder. But another inmate who was already serving life claims responsibility for the act.
Okay.
So this other chap, he says, I'm in here anyway. Fuck it, I did it. What are you going to do? You're going to another life sentence? So someone else takes responsibility for this crime. At the end of January 1932... Clyde has had enough. The labour in the fields is horrendous. And in an effort to avoid this, Clyde purposely has two of his toes amputated. Now, whether this is self-inflicted or he persuades another inmate to sort of assist in this amputation, I don't know. But because of it, he walks with a limp for the rest of his life. And he is quite severely injured. So, yes, he can't be sent out to the fields to work anymore. However, without his knowledge, his mother... Cumi. Now, she has been busy on the outside petitioning for her son and has already successfully arranged for her son's release from prison.
Well, he's just amputated his toes.
In February,
no!
He is granted parole by the Texas governor and released from prison. And this is 6 days after he chops his toes off that he is released thanks to his mother's efforts.
That's horrific timing, obviously. But also, what goes through your mind? What must he have gone through in prison? I'm not necessarily trying to elicit sympathy here, but to go to those lengths,
I mean, he is
to not work, to mutilate yourself.
He has had a horrendous time. Obviously, he's been assaulted
that
and
is
attacked
horrific.
By another inmate repeatedly, as the stories go. And yeah, it is a not a nice place. It is an appalling place.
So he doesn't
prison.
Want to be out there.
So he can't be out there for, 16, 18 hours a day in the fields.
It's basically, in the boiling sun.
In the heat of the full on sun.
And cotton picking is a...
absolutely. I mean, it's replaced. It is a different form of slave labour, pretty much. The prison
it's
population.
The same.
It's the prison population is now performing those same tasks.
Yeah.
But now he's out of it. His mother has managed to petition the courts and she's got him out.
He was like, you couldn't have written a letter.
A week earlier, it would have been great.
She was trying her best.
Well, she really was.
Leave
absolutely.
Your mother alone.
But now Bonnie and Clyde are reunited.
Oh.
And Governor Sterling quickly comes to realise he's made a big old mistake in granting parole on this one. Just over a month after Clyde's release, a series of robberies and burglaries and murders begin that will go on for 2 years.
Wow.
Now, we do think of Bonnie and Clyde as a couple against the world. Mm-hmm. But actually, they operated as part of a large crew. There was them and there were others in the gang. Now, they're known as the Barrow Gang. So Clyde's surname is Barrow. So they are known as the Barrow Gang. Now, other members include Clyde's brother, Buck, and Buck's wife, Blanche. We also have William Daniel Jones, another chap, Raymond Hamilton, Henry Methvin, all these people who are core contributors to the gang. There are a few others who come and go, but that's the core sort of group.
Nice.
On the 19th of April, Clyde, Bonnie, and another chap, Ralph Fultz, they attempt to rob a hardware store in Kaufman, Texas.
Mm.
Now, they're aiming to add the store's firearm collection to the gang's increasing armory. Now, unfortunately, the three are spotted going into the store by a police chief, Police Chief David Drennan. He also sees them running out a few minutes later, being chased by an irate store owner. So the theft has not gone overly well. They pile into a stolen car and head west. But the police chief, he is in hot pursuit. He knows they've attempted to rob this place. They only get a few miles before the stolen car gets stuck in the mud. No good. What are we going to do? How can we continue the escape? Oh my God. There are some mules. There are some donkeys. We get on the donkeys. So off they go. Two mules between the three of them. Bonnie and Clyde on a mule. Ralph on the back on another mule. Off they go. They're heading off.
Donkeys, I'm just going to say it, not famously speedy.
They
can go a pace.
But still apparently outrunning the police.
I mean, the police were were the police in cars on foot? What were the police on?
I don't know. But Mum assumed they have perhaps done some sort of diversions and sort of lost them. So the police don't even know exactly where they are. They're now on donkey back.
They're on donkeys and they're throwing carrots behind them to distract the police officers. Officers are too busy on the coconut shy to chase down the donkeys. I mean, donkeys are great. Love donkeys. Yeah. Save the donkeys. In various European countries. I cannot stress that enough. But also, they're not the most dynamic.
Yeah, but they're now heading north towards Kemp on some donkeys. So they're off they go. They're on the donkeys. A few miles pass, and they find another car. There's another car on the side of the road. Right,
they kill the donkeys.
Get rid of the fucking donkeys. Get in the car.
They're like, oh, thank the good Lord. These have been useless. They did was follow the North Star to the newborn Lord.
So they get back in the car, and they head back to Kaufman. Now, once again, on their way back, the car gets stuck in the fucking mud again.
What the fuck are they doing?
They've obviously gone the same way back again.
Why can't they drive?
Stuck in the same mud. No donkeys left. What are they going to do? There are no more donkeys.
Use the fucking roads.
The three take off on foot. By this time, the police have sort of caught up to them.
Angry at them now. I'm annoyed at everyone in that group.
They are on foot. They are firing at the police.
Yeah.
They are shooting off at the police who are trying to get them. The shootout ends 25 miles. They leg it.
It doesn't.
While firing at the police.
That is a marathon.
It is. It's a long old
way. That is a good... If you're not running solidly, that is a good 6 or 7 hours by foot. You do not have enough bullets.
This is what the story says.
Someone missed a decimal point.
Post a 2.5 miles away.
No one ran a marathon with the police.
So they are running far away, shooting as they go. Ralph Fultz, he gets shot. He gets hit. He goes down.
They had time.
The police catch up with him. They get Bonnie. She is unharmed, but they get her. Clyde manages an escape. The pair of them, Ralph and Bonnie, they give false names. When they were interviewed by the police, Jack Sherman and Betty Thornton.
Okay.
They give. They are both arrested for mule theft, auto theft, and burglary. Mule theft comes first. That's the important one.
Absolutely.
Auto theft, burglary.
Mule abuse.
So, the pair are held for 2 months before their trial. And it's then that this is the time where Bonnie writes two of her most well-known poems.
Okay.
The Trail's End and Suicide Sal.
Ah.
Two of the poems that she writes. At the trial, Bonnie is released. There is no charge. They find her not guilty.
Okay.
Ralph is sentenced to 5 years in jail.
Mm.
Bonnie is free to go. Now, whilst Bonnie and Fultz have been held in jail, Clyde is free to do as he pleased. And so, of course, a bit more mayhem was on the cards. On the 30th of April, two gang members, Ralph Hamilton and Frank Claus, they pay a visit to J.N. Butcher's shop, which is a general convenience store. It's shortly after midnight on the 30th, and Butcher and his wife, Medora, they are fast asleep, and there is a big old banging at the door. Then they go downstairs, open the door. The men claim that they want to purchase guitar strings. Emergency midnight guitar playing.
Yep.
Is very, very important.
There is a sesh going on.
There is a sesh going on.
In pub, and we require guitar strings.
Yep. We require some guitars. A butcher allows them in to make this purchase. Yeah. And Raymond, he pays with a $10 bill.
Okay.
Now, this forces Butcher to open the safe to get the change out. The second the safe is opened, a gun is pointed at his back. He feels a gun on his back. But what the robbers don't know is that Butcher keeps his pistol inside the safe.
Oh.
And he makes for his pistol. He pulls out the gun, but before he can shoot, the robbers fire. The bullet goes straight through his heart, killing him instantly. Oof. Butcher is out. Now, the other two, they take what they can and they leg it from the store. They get into the waiting getaway vehicle, which is driven by Clyde. Mm. Now, Clyde had volunteered to be the getaway driver on this case because he knows Butcher's son. Mm. He knew the shop. He knew the man. So if he was there, he would instantly be recognized by the man. The group escape. Madura later identifies Clyde as the shooter. How she saw him? We're not quite sure, because in theory, he was meant to be in the car, waiting in the car for the two guys to come. But no, she says, no, he is the one who shot my husband.
Yeah.
So we're not quite sure how that works. Potentially. Yeah. Or she's seen him out the window. He's involved. Now, the gang seem to keep a bit of a low profile after the murder of Butcher. They continue to rob and thieve, but no one seems to get hurt, really. Mm. It's just threats of violence rather than actual violence. Until, of course, 5th of August, 1932, Clyde, Raymond Hamilton and Ross Dyer, they're drinking moonshine at a country dance. It's a lovely time. in Stringtown, Oklahoma.
Stringtown. That's not a good name for a town.
I imagine they make string.
Lot of G-strings.
Yes. Now, the three men, they've been having a jolly time. They're having a few drinks. La, la, la. All good. Sheriff Maxwell and a deputy, Eugene Moore, come into the dance and they approach the three men. Now, the three men are there going, what do these fuckers want? Mm. Is it all in uniform? Big shiny gold stars? Not good. Without a word, Clyde Hamilton open fire.
Oh, Jesus.
Out come the guns. They start blasting away. Deputy Moore killed outright.
Okay, so killed not a good idea.
There and then. They severely wound Sheriff Maxwell, who does eventually survive, thankfully. But the men flee the chaos and then they escape. I could probably have another drink.
Is it time for another drink? Let's have a drink.
Da-da-da. Marvelous.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So back to the Barrow Gang.
The Barrow Gang.
Christmas Day, 1932. Bonnie and Clyde, they're taking a trip back to Dallas to visit with family. While they're there, they catch up with one of Clyde's old school friends, William Daniel Jones. Mm. Now, William Jones, he himself has a bit of a fondness for car theft. They get on very, very well. William and Clyde are out walking of the evening when William spots a car with keys in the ignition. He's just out on the street.
Foolish.
He opens the door. He attempts to start the car, but fails. It's the middle of December. Fucking cold out. It's causing an issue with the ignition. Clyde goes over to help. If we're going to do this, we need to do this quickly. We need to get rid of this. While the two men are there trying to get the car started, Doyle Johnson. Now, he's happily at home in there taking a nap. I mean, it's his Christmas day.
He's just full of turkey.
He's full of turkey, absolutely.
He's been supplied by a strange man.
He's there taking a nap on his chair until his family starts screaming. Someone is trying to steal the car. Johnson goes out and he grabs hold of Clyde and he shouts back at his family to call the police. Clyde tells him, "Let go or I will kill you." Now, Johnson ignores this warning and he continues to try and grapple Clyde. Doyle Johnson is shot in the neck. Clyde and William drive off. Obviously, having started the car,
finally
they drive off into the distance. Doyle Johnson dies the next day in hospital. Boxing Day. Happy Christmas to the Johnson family. March 1933. The gang head out to meet up with Clyde's brother, Buck, who he has now just got out of jail. He's just been paroled. So, hey, celebrations. Celebrations are to be had.
Woohoo!
Buck, his wife Blanche, Clyde, Bonnie and William, they all hole up in a sort of a temporary hideout in Joplin in Missouri.
Nice.
Now, the gang, they're not exactly keeping a low profile in the neighbourhood. Mm-hmm. They have music blaring from dawn till midnight. They are 24 hours a day, music going on.
Was that on the Vitrola or was that just them playing?
Oh, no, I think it's on the radio or they're just playing music. They're getting pretty drunk.
Yeah.
Clyde and Buck are often coming for crates of beer. Prohibition, but they managed to find some beer from somewhere. They're having a grand old time. Endless supplies of snacks coming in. They
snacks.
Keep...
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, absolutely. Beer and snacks and music and games. And
here's your pallet of cheese, gentlemen.
They're having a lovely time. The volume is terrible, but none of the neighbours dare approach the house. No one knows exactly who's in there. They don't know it's the Barrow Gang, but obviously they're not the sort of people you want to mess with. You don't want to go and knock on the door going, "Can you keep it down, please?" It's not going to end well. But one neighbour, however, he is getting really annoyed and really pissed off with this cacophony coming from this house, and he calls the police.
Mm.
Now, the police, they think this gang are bootleggers.
Okay.
They don't know it's the Barrow Gang.
Yeah,
they think
enough,
they think
they're
rowdy.
They're
stupid.
Yeah.
They're bootleggers. Right, we can take them down. We can stop this booze coming in. And they plan a raid on the house. 13th of April, a 5-man squad approaches the house.
Oh.
Now, as soon as the group realise the police are literally at the door, Clyde and Joe's open fire. They have no hesitancy in just firing away. They kill Detective Harry McGinnis outright.
Jesus.
He goes down in the first blast. They fatally wound a Constable Harriman. Bonnie opens fire with a Browning rifle as the group run to try and escape. Now, this causes Highway Patrol Sergeant Kayla. He runs and ducks behind an oak tree on the property. Splinters go flying as bullets whack into this tree, and his face gets completely lacerated and cut to pieces by these flying splinters. Once the officers are sort of subdued and they're taking cover, Bonnie jumps into the car. The rest of the gang grab Blanche, Buck's wife, from the street. She has chased her pet dog, Snowball, out into the street to try and rescue Snowball. So everyone else is blasting away. Blanche is out there trying to get the dog.
100%, I'm behind her.
Absolutely.
Save the goddamn dog. So fuck everyone else.
So the rest of the guys, so Buck and Clyde, they get Blanche, they get Snowball into the car, and off they go.
Little dog.
Now, they don't the group don't escape entirely unharmed from this. The police fire around about 14 rounds or so. William Jones, he is hit in the side once. Buck is grazed by a ricocheting bullet. Clyde is hit, but the bullet is deflected by a coat button.
Okay, that's handy.
There's very, very precise shooting.
Like it.
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
So well, no, I don't think it's precise shooting. It's just dumb luck.
It's just dumb luck. Absolute dumb luck.
Jesus.
Dumb luck. Yeah, he is saved by his coat button.
Nice.
Now, the surprise appearance of the police mean that they have lost everything. They have not had a chance to pack up any of their kit, their belongings, all been left behind. All their weapons, all their ammunition, Buck's parole papers are all there. Bonnie's poems. Which is how Bonnie's poems make it into circulation. And also several rolls of undeveloped film, pictures, which is how all the pictures of Bonnie, you say famous pictures of Bonnie posing by the car,
pointing the gun at him.
Absolutely.
Yes.
They are all. That's how those pictures are discovered from these undeveloped rolls there. Now, say these pictures become front page news. Across the country. There's a very famous one, and Bonnie, she's got one sort of one foot up on the car, and she's got a cigar in one hand and a pistol in the other, splashed across all the papers in America. But it becomes now a lot more difficult for the gang to go around sort of unnoticed, slightly under the radar. And now their pictures are in the papers. On the 10th of June, so only like a month after all this happened, Clyde takes a V8 Ford for a joyride.
What?
A Ford V8 motor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's seen. That's a nice car.
I'll
have that.
Yay.
So off they go. He's got Bonnie and William Jones along for the ride.
Nice.
Now, Clyde apparently has a definite fondness for Fords. on this. He writes a letter to Henry Ford in 1934.
Sure.
Saying, "Whilst I still have breath in my lungs, I will tell you what a dandy car you make. I have drove Fords exclusively when I can get away with one. For sustained speed and freedom from trouble, the Ford has got every other skinned, and even if my business hasn't been strictly legal, it don't hurt anything to tell you what a fine car you've got in the V8.
What? That's amazing.
Yeah.
Also, free advertising.
Free advertising.
Like, that's fantastic.
Yeah. So, dear
but old... also, your energy could be best spent elsewhere, I feel.
He's just penned a little note, his appreciation for a fine car. It may not be strictly legal, but I like them.
Not at all. Killed a bunch of people on the way here, but you know what? I think your cars are lovely.
I think your cars are great. So he's driving as fast as he can, having a jolly old time. He doesn't notice the detour sign that flashes past him.
Okay.
He crashes through a wooden barricade and flips the car onto its side, almost ending up in the Salt Fork River. Now, a family from a nearby farm, they see this terrible thing happen and they rush out to help. They pull Clyde and Jones out of the windscreen. And the second they're free, they are much more concerned about getting all the guns out of the boot than Bonnie, who's still stuck in the car. And she's got some real injuries. She's got some severe burns to her right leg. The farmers, they carry Bonnie to their home and they try and treat her burns as best they can. Clyde is refusing to call a doctor. Nope, no one can know about this. Despite the fact that they can see bone.
Jesus.
That's how severe these burns are.
Okay.
So you really do need to call a doctor. You really should get someone out here. One member of the family drives to the nearby town of Wellington to inform the county sheriff and the local doctor that this accident has happened. So they don't know who it is that this accident happened to. Just a terrible accident. You need
to come over.
Someone, you can see their bones. That's not normal. County sheriff, George Corey, and the town chief, Paul Hardy, they all pile back to the farm to see what's going on. Now, when the group, they return, Clyde points his rifle at them. As soon as they enter the house, Clyde is there with his rifle. William is there with a shotgun next to him.
Okay.
The pair, they force these two officers into the back seat of the car that they had arrived in. And they load Bonnie into the middle of the front seat. Clyde drives off, Jones in the passenger seat, so with these two officers behind them. Now, after a few miles, Bonnie is in such pain, sitting in the wedge between the two of them there with her leg oozing and bleeding and in a lot of pain. They move her to the back seat, lying across these two police officers, sort of to try and make her a bit more comfortable. Clyde eventually stops at a prearranged meet-up point where they were supposed to be meeting with Buck and Blanche. Mm. After a quick discussion, Buck and Clyde, they decide they're not going to kill the policeman. Policemen have actually been very good to Bonnie. While she's been lying across them in the back of the car, right. they've been taking care of her, they've been looking after them. So,
well, that's nice.
Fine, we shan't kill them. We
also,
shan't kill them.
Let's not kill two police officers.
Let's not
add that to their record.
Yeah, they think that doesn't bother them so much.
No, it's not. I suppose they killed the other
but,
people.
But they're there. No, they've been nice. So instead, they handcuff these two police officers to a tree, wrap them with some barbed wire.
Okay.
To go around, so they ain't getting out anytime soon, and then off they go.
Quite a good tactic, I suppose. So, don't want them to try and wriggle free.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, they have another lucky escape in July, when the gang check into the Red Crown Tourist Court. So, a delightful motel just south of Place City in Missouri. Blanche, she pays for two cabins for three people to stay. But the owner, a chap called Neil Hauser, spots five people getting out of the car. So, no, you've paid for three people.
Hmm.
There's five people. No.
It's just a quiet orgy.
Absolutely not. He also noticed that the guests tape newspaper up at the windows of the cabin.
Never a good sign.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not ideal. So he informs the local captain, Captain Baxter, of the highway patrol. Now, Baxter keeps an eye on these cabins. That's a bit weird. He spots Clyde and William heading into town for medical supplies.
Mm.
So now he knows it's the Barrow gang that are holed up in this place. He's seen them with his own eyes. Captain Baxter and the local sheriff, a chap called Coffrey, they request reinforcements from Kansas City. Mm-hmm. They are taking no chances now. They are known to be evil bastards, this gang. We need all the armory we can get. Mm. They have numerous state troopers. They have an armoured vehicle. They have an armoured car going on there. The officers are armed with Tommy guns, absolutely. So, and they advance behind this armoured car for cover.
Well,
so
they are taking no. Blame them.
Yeah, absolutely. They are taking no chances.
These are people who are just not bothered at all about who they kill.
They are shoot first, ask questions after shooting some more.
Maybe ish. So,
as soon as the gang see this lumbering armoured vehicle approach, they open fire.
Mm-hmm.
No questions asked. Start firing. Bullets are pinging off all over the place. There's a hail of bullets from both sides, but someone in the gang gets off a lucky shot. A shot that short circuits the armoured car's horn.
Oh, okay.
And sets the car horn off.
Oh, nice.
Now, this is the unknown signal for all the officers to cease fire. If the horn of the armoured vehicle goes off,
very convenient.
You will stop firing.
That's magic.
It's magic.
That's
weird. They are terrifyingly lucky. This is the signal to stop firing.
Right.
You will stop firing and you will sort of pull back from this. So they hear this siren, this horn go off, and they do exactly that. But we're winning. Why should we stop now? But okay, the horn's gone off, so fine. In this confusion, the gang are able to escape.
Let's just creep out the back on tiptoes.
They do it. Now, Blanche, she has been nearly blinded by fine glass so she is being guided out. Buck has been really badly injured. A bullet has shattered part of his skull. Part of his brain is exposed at this point. He's still alive and able to move around.
Not well.
And be dragged. Yes. But yeah, exactly. Now, the gang, they get to a car and they flee. And they find an abandoned amusement park. Fantastic.
Guarded by an old man.
Fantastic place for a gang to hide out.
100%. With a big dog.
Dexfield Park, near Dexter in Iowa.
Dexfield Park.
Now, Buck is still alive, but it does not look good. You can see his brains. This is not encouraging. Clyde and William, they dig a grave near the campsite, thinking he's got hours left, if anything. On the 24th of July, local police and around 100 spectators gather. They know the Barrow gang are at this amusement park. They all want to see the capture of these people. Now, the police go in and they start shooting. Under fire, Bonnie, Clyde, and Jones manage to escape. They manage to get away again. Buck and Blanche, not so lucky. Buck is shot again. He's shot in the back.
Yeah.
It
seems like they got away at the expense of other people.
Yeah,
it doesn't absolutely. Seem like miraculously they got away. Like the other people were drawing fire. And they were like, you draw fire while we will work out another plan. Run.
Yeah, they are throwing people in the way of these approaching officers. Yeah, so Buck is shot again, shot in the back. Mm. Blanche is unharmed, but they are both arrested. Buck dies about 5 days later. 6 weeks go by. And the remaining gang, they continue to rob and steal while they are on the run. They're still trying to escape. They're trying to rebuild what they had and what all they had left behind. This continues till early September. Bonnie and Clyde, they go back to Dallas to visit family. William goes down to Houston to see his mother. On the 16th of November, after spending a month or so at home, William hands himself in.
Ooh.
So who knows what his mother has said, what his mother has persuaded him to do. But it's like, no, you will not do this robbing and murdering people anymore. You will turn yourself in to the police.
Either that or his mother was a terrible cook and he's like, I can't take any more of it.
The prison is the best. But now it is Bonnie and Clyde against the world. Mm. Now it really is just the pair of them.
Yeah.
The 16th of January 1934, Clyde orchestrates the escape of Raymond Hamilton, Henry Methvin, and a couple of others from Eastern State Farm, the prison. Joe Palmer, one of the escapees, shoots a Major Croson during the escape. This man also dies a few days later, and the responsibility is pinned on Clyde. Over the next few months, the police kill every one of the escapees. Former Texas Ranger, Captain Frank Hammer. Frank Hammer, he is assigned to the task of tracking down Bonnie and Clyde.
Hammer time.
No. He is going to deal with this problem once and for all. Now, the papers carry the story that, Frank, he's out to kill Bonnie and Clyde.
Mm.
None of this arrest, capture nonsense anymore. Dead. No dead or alive. Just dead.
Just dead. just dead. He killy man.
Yeah.
Of the horrible people.
On the 1st of April, Clyde and the last surviving escapee, Henry Methvin, they kill two patrolmen, Murphy and Bryant, near Grapevine in Texas.
Mm.
Now, these murders are... They are what finally makes the public go, for fuck's sake. Before, it had been a bit of a romantic story behind that. Now it's just like, now you're just killing people for the fun of killing people. And you're killing police officers because you want to kill police officers.
Yeah,
it's not on anymore. Public opinion entirely sways, and they view this couple now as monsters. An eyewitness comes forward saying that during these murders of these two policemen, that Bonnie and Clyde, they fired the fatal shot, and that Bonnie laughed as she fired. This eyewitness account changes several times throughout the investigation, so many times that the police are forced to go, no, you're talking bollocks. Mm. But of course, the papers have already run with it. The public believe it all. A few days later, the newspapers post photos of one of the policeman's fiancées wearing her wedding dress at his funeral.
That's fucking drama. Sorry,
that's
what?
That's a lot of drama.
She wore her wedding dress at his funeral.
Her wedding dress to be. So she is her fiancé. They're not yet married. She's obviously bought her dress in preparation for the wedding.
Oh, okay. Is that better? I don't know. I imagine them already being married and then she wore the wedding dress at the funeral. She was wearing her... That's just weird.
So, yeah.
She No, that's weird. You don't wear your wedding dress to be at the funeral. That's someone who was screaming, the attention all needs to be on me. I was going to have my big day and now I'm having it. Fuck the guy in the ground.
Well, it worked. Across every paper in the country.
I'm not surprised. Hopefully some of those headlines going in poor taste. Jesus Christ. Oh, I do quite like that energy.
Yeah, absolutely.
I quite like it. I would do that.
I'm wearing my wedding dress. I've never had a chance to wear it. Yeah. I paid for it. I'm going to get one use out of it.
Oh, God. Yeah, 100%. 100. Wear your wedding dress to other people's weddings, people. Just to see what happens.
After that, the public are now demanding that the Barrow Gang be brought to justice and be punished. The highway patrol put out a $1,000 reward, saying the money is only for the dead bodies of the grapevine slayers.
Nice.
Days after this bounty is issued, Clyde and Henry Methven, they kill 60-year-old Constable William Campbell near Commerce, Oklahoma. After they kill him, the group kidnap Police Chief Percy Boyd and drive him across a straight line into Kansas City. So they now kidnap the police chief. They release him with a message. Mm-hmm. Bonnie orders that Boyd has to inform the public, has to inform the newspapers, that she doesn't smoke cigars.
Right. That's it.
That's it.
That's it.
That's it. No concern with the murderings and the robbings and all that.
I don't smoke cigars. But that is a lie and slander, sir.
There's a picture of me smoking cigars. I don't smoke cigars. How dare
Fair
you?
That's
how
the hill you'll die on.
That's the hill she's going to go on. Yeah, everything is fine, but no, I don't smoke. Mm-hmm. By May 1934, Clyde has 16 warrants out for his arrest. Multiple counts of robbery, theft, escape, murder across four different states. As the gang travel across country, Frank Hammer is plotting their every move, trying to predict where they're going to end up. He works out that they tend to sort of follow the edges of states. They're never in the, they're always around the edges. He also notices that they, whenever they pass by family, they always go and visit family when they can. He tries to set a trap. He learns that the group are planning a visit to Louisiana to visit Henry Methven's family. Now, Bonnie and Clyde drove separately. Henry Methven drives his own vehicle, but they all agree to meet at Henry's parents' home in Louisiana. Hammer is going to take him down. Oi. And he forms a posse of Texas and Louisiana officers. On the 22nd of May, they set up a roadblock by the Louisiana State Highway 154, just south of Gibbsland. The first to fall into the trap is Henry. He is arrested. His truck is pushed off the road to look as if it's broken down. All part of a cunning plan. Obviously, it's not Henry that Frank Hammer really wants. He wants Bonnie and Clyde. 9:15 the next morning, the sound of a Ford V8 engine fills the air, and the car that Hammer and his men are expecting begins to speed down the road towards them. Now, as expecting, the car slows as the driver seems to spot Henry's truck on the side of the road. As the car is slowing, the police open fire. There are no questions to be asked, no stop and search, automatic rifles. Okay. Clips are emptied before the car is even level with the roadblock, the ambush. According to one Texas officer, he remembered hearing Bonnie scream. Okay. As you went past, when the rifles were out of ammunition, the shotguns followed, firing into the car as it rolled by. Ooh. It rolled to a stop about 50 yards away, ended up in a ditch, smoke billowing from the engine. As the police approach, out come the pistols, empty their pistol clips into the car. They are taking no fucking chances with any of this.
Neither did Bonnie and Clyde.
Well, no, absolutely. Yeah, no, they're making sure that these fuckers are dead.
Yeah.
Indeed. Over 130 rounds are fired into the car. The coroner later identifies 17 entrance wounds on Clyde and 26 on Bonnie.
Okay.
Any number of which would have been instantly fatal.
Yeah.
News quickly spreads of this ambush. What has happened? Yeah. And a crowd starts to gather terrifyingly fast. Before the car can be removed from the ditch, people are arriving. Several of the officers, they go to inform their superiors, to try and make arrangements to get the car towed away. They leave two officers on guard. Mm. These officers, they quickly lose control of everything, of the crowd that's building. One woman is cutting locks of Bonnie's hair. Cutting bits of her dress off. They find another man trying to cut Clyde's trigger finger off his hand.
That's a level of weird.
It's a delightful souvenir.
That's weird. So,
the car is towed with the bodies still inside to the nearby town of Arcadia. The usual population of Arcadia is around 2,000. By that evening, it's over 12,000. Mm. With people arriving by train, horse, buggy, whatever they can, to come and see the infamous Bonnie and Clyde. And that is the story of Bonnie and Clyde.
Brilliant. Yay! Fantastic. But it is fascinating.
It is.
Because we only have them in legend and the sort of passing references to them of like, oh, this legendary couple who loved each other so much, and they killed a shit ton of people. Yeah. And how they were caught.
14 people.
14 people.
14
yeah,
people.
Yeah, and were not unhappy about it. Part of a gang, very important to stress yeah. that it wasn't just the two of them. The manner in which they died is very famous because the death yeah. car, I believe, went on tour.
Oh, yeah, it is now in a casino in Las Vegas. Ooh. In.
I'd be yeah, interested. In, well, Vegas. I mean, that sounds very macabre to say, like, oh my God, I haven't seen this. The car where people
yeah.
died
yeah.
is a bit weird.
And, oh, yeah, because it used to, yes, absolutely. It used to be in all the.
But it used to go on the, all the side shows.
On the circuses and shite. Yeah. So you could pay a dollar to go and sit in the death car.
Yeah,
yeah absolutely.
Yeah. And the way they died is so violent and absolutely being riddled with bullets. It's sort of. I know some people think it's the inspiration for Godfather and the way that Sonny, if you've not seen it, he dies. If anyone was planning to watch that tonight, going, oh,
spoiler!
Oh, oh. Well, that very, very famous scene in that film. Yeah, a fascinating story of a couple who were part of a gang who killed a load of people.
Killed a lot of people.
Some interesting methods to catch them as well. But it's been really highly romanticised.
Oh, it really has, because they were stupidly lucky for a lot of the time.
Yeah.
They were not master criminals.
No.
They were quite stupid in many of the things they did and incredibly lucky in a lot of the how they got away with a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
It was just dumb luck, really. But they just stretched out over a long, long time.
Do you think it's romanticised because the longevity of their career coupled with the fact that they were a couple?
I think, yeah, absolutely. I think it is. It's going out in that sort of blaze of glory type thing, isn't it? It's sort of, it's got that.
I don't think they were choosing to do that.
No. But I think they probably would have done, though. I think they're the sort of people that they
would rather die.
They'd rather die
than give in.
Die together than live apart, sort of thing.
Is that true? And we can't possibly answer it.
We can't possibly
but
answer
it.
But
everyone
that.
Sort of takes away they would rather die together. They were their, you know, joined at the hip and they were this crime wielding duo. I want to say crime fighting there,
yeah,
weirdly.
Not crime fighting,
but
crime causing.
They committed all of these crimes together. They were posed in the photos. They wrote poems and everything, so it's very romantic. They would rather die together than go out alone. Is that even true? Is it just a victim? It's just circumstance.
We don't know.
Is it just they were a couple in a gang? They didn't seem to make it their whole being.
No, indeed. No, absolutely. I mean, what's interesting is, I mean, Bonnie obviously had never committed to any crime before she met Clyde. So obviously he heavily influenced what she did. It was also said that she never removed her wedding ring from Roy right at the beginning. Until her death she's always wore her wedding ring, which was also a bit peculiar as well. Yeah. So they are portrayed as this utterly devoted couple, but I'm not sure how true that
Well,
that
I think
is.
The film Bonnie and Clyde has obviously affected that in the '70s.
Have you not seen it?
No, I've seen To be honest, I've seen bits of it. I can't remember huge swathes of it, but there's very famous scenes in it. Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway. Gorgeous, gorgeous couple. There's a whole kind of when they are shot out in the blaze of glory. Mm. It's like they have this kind of eye contact and everything. we're going to die together.
It's a very Thelma Reeve sort of thing going on there.
And it's more like, no, you just drove into a fucking fight.
You didn't have you're going to see a mate's parents. And you go and visit a mate, and then suddenly you're shot to pieces.
Yeah. So let's not over romanticize it. Yeah, but it's a fascinating story.
Yeah,
it's
one that you know the name, but you don't really know what's behind it. And potentially should have made this two episodes, but
maybe
because there was a lot more in there
that
that I cut out. So
well worth telling, and we're very glad that you did. Well, what do you think, people? What do you think of the story of Bonnie and Clyde? There were more people involved than Bonnie and Clyde, but what about the legend of this couple, this crime wielding couple? Got to think of another word from that. What do you think about their motives? What do you think about the romance and the folklore that's told about it? Do you know more stories about them? Tell us what you think. Jump on the comments of this episode. Tell us your thoughts, your theories, your feelings, your musings, if you will. And also anything else that we may not have uncovered in this episode. But most importantly, for Nick, certainly, you must mix up the Ford.
The Ford. which actually made me very drunk.
Yes, because it's just a martini, mate.
Yeah, but I've only had one. And halfway through that, I felt myself going, oh, I'm drunk. So yeah, so deceptively potent.
Yes, I didn't mind it in the end.
You survived. You finished it.
I managed to finish it.
Well done.
But yes, it does make you feel a bit drunk. Yes, because it's a martini, essentially.
Yeah. So hopefully that made sense.
It's an interesting, divisive one. So if you're a martini fan, mix one up if you have the ingredients or order it at the next bar that you are at. If they can manage it, and tell us what you think. Also send us pictures of whatever cocktails you are enjoying this weekend or wherever you are in your life. And recommendations for more cocktail bars that we could visit. If you haven't already, please join us on Patreon and please leave us a review on Apple iTunes if you love the show, because it really, really helps us grow our audience. Thanks for listening, guys. We have been the people inside the poisoner's cabinet. We will see you next week. And remember, your loved ones are trying to kill you.
Oi.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.